Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Hawk Time Podcast. I'm Nick, and today we've got a bit of a special episode for you. Different format. We've got more of a open conversation style with a couple different people. So first off, my left, we have Graham.
Hey, guys.
We have Brandon.
Yellow.
We have Blake.
What's up, y'all?
We have Ashvin.
Hey, guys.
And our tech guru is on this one. We have Sam.
What's up?
So, obviously, we have quite a lot to talk about if you're in tune with recent events. But we're going to talk about the most obvious one today, which is the storming of the Capitol. So, got a whole lot of people here today, and we're going to talk about a very pressing issue. Recently, depending on when you're listening to this, pro-Trump supporters stormed the U.S. Capitol. They made it as far as Senate chambers. They're in offices, and there was bits and pieces, some items that were looted. So today we're gonna talk about that and give our thoughts. It's a complex topic with a whole lot of different viewpoints. So hope we break that down well. So first off, to any of y'all, question. Obviously, I don't think any of us are condoning what happened. Let's address the common one. There's rumors that, you know, oh, that was Antifa. Any of y'all think that, or are we all good?
I know I'm kind of the only right-leaning person here, but the New York Times actually posted an article about 3 or 4 hours after the rush mm-hmm. took place, and they had, like, kind of this facial recognition company.
Yeah.
Because literally all of these, I don't know, rioters didn't wear masks or anything. It was honestly really, really stupid of them. If they were going to do something this criminal, why would you not, like, protect yourself? Anyway, mm-hmm. So at the point, they had found already 2 Antifa members. So I don't want to, and I haven't delved too deep into this, but if we've already found 2, we don't know how many more there are. Mm-hmm. Do I think that there were Trump supporters there? Yes. And am I sad that they paint this bad image for Trump supporters across America? Yes. I'm disappointed in those people, but I don't want to just rule out the fact that Antifa mm-hmm. couldn't have been involved. So,
yeah.
I think it's definitely possible that Antifa wasn't involved in the Capitol riots, but I don't think it's definitely not widespread.
No, I mean, I agree. I think that I was actually watching like a live stream kind of in between the whole proceedings of counting the electoral votes with Mike mm-hmm. Pence and stuff, in between the riots and stuff like that. and I think that they made a good point. They were saying that Antifa may have been involved, but the weak follow. The mm-hmm. weak people follow. It's not the people who are strong and crazy that are going up to the Capitol and rioting. It's the weak people who don't have a strong moral compass who are basically giving in to these really, really dumb ideas and doing stuff that can put their lives in jeopardy, put a lot of things in jeopardy that I don't think is smart at all.
Actually, I want to cut in here. One of my really good friends was actually at the rally, just because, you know, he personally believes that Trump should be president, and I respect that. You know, it's okay. You have the right to rally, you know, just, you know, fight for what you think is right. He thought that what he actually saw, the events that day, because he was outside the Capitol, he just didn't, like, breach it or anything like that. Because he actually just wanted to go there to actually just protest, because he just believed that Trump should be, the election was a little bit rigged and that Trump should be president. And he basically was talking to me about how, like, actually over like 90% of the people that actually came there to rally just was there for the rally. Mm-hmm. It was only the 10% that were the radical supporters that actually breached the premises. And they just wanted to do it just because they could. And once enough of them breached and they saw that the police weren't doing anything to stop them, it just more was like, oh, we can do this as well. So just more and more kept going in that actually just the more radicals. But most of the people actually did stay back. And it was a completely peaceful rally until all of a sudden my friend believes was probably a couple of Antifa members or just a certain party of people. They started, you know, trying to breach the Capitol and rallying people up to do that. And I just think it was kind of blown out of proportion by the media saying that Trump incited everyone to go breach the Capitol and destroy democracy. I just think, I don't personally believe it was Trump's fault for this. I think it's his radical supporters that are just, that go against possibly his word, or they believe that he thinks he should, they should do that.
I think, like, to sum it up, kind of what I think we all agree, Nick, you started with this, that no one condones what these people did, but we all would agree that the media has, in a sense, blown it out of proportion in the fact that I don't think any of us truly believe that Trump said blatantly, hey, we need to go attack the Capitol because they're counting electoral votes or anything like that. But, I mean, yeah, it's the weak people or the few people that paint a bad picture for a large majority of people, regardless of their acts.
Just for, like, viewers, you might see people saying that he did, like, say this. In his speech he gave at a rally just before these actions said, he said, he asked, like, and told people to go march and protest. So yes, he did say go protest and rally, but no, he did not say let's go storm, you know, the Senate floor and try to steal and overthrow the government or any magnitude of that. So, if we are ready, I've got question follow up for Graham actually. We were talking a lot about like don't condone these actions and may have been members of Antifa regardless, but the weak follow the strong. When it comes to, I know how I feel about this just as like a history guy. There were people who were, one guy was trying to take down some of the paintings that are hung in there.
Yeah, somebody left with a chair.
Yeah, a chair or like that. Obviously everybody's seeing all over social media, the dude with the pedestal, the speakers.
Put it on eBay.
Yeah, put it on eBay. How much was it?
Only $99,000.
Steel.
Quite money. Steel. That's mm-hmm. cash. But when you have these people like, discounting those who were actually rallying, how do you think, just as somebody who's more leaning that side, how do you think this was able to happen to the point where people were able to take stuff and leave with it? Like, obviously the U.S. Capitol, you know, that's the heart of America, you would think it would be, but if only say 10%, I would think it's probably a little less, probably like 8-9% of people of this whole rally got in. How was this able to occur?
Yeah. I don't know, I mean, logistically, why there were not enough police officers there or why they weren't well equipped enough. but I think it boils down to a cultural issue. We were kind of talking about it earlier, me and Sam, me and Ashton were as well, that people overlook the Capitol, what goes on in the Capitol, the Senate, the House, and people generally focus on the figurehead, like the president. I mean, rightfully so, the president makes a lot of decisions, but the reason we have checks and balances and stuff like that, they equally have power. The Senate and House equally have power. I mean, they decided the president over these past few days in counting the electoral votes. Like, they really did. So even the people who put police officers there and equipped the front line of police officers and people like that, I just don't think that they understood the magnitude of what could happen. And they didn't believe that those people in the Capitol were as important as someone like the president.
Yeah, that's fair.
If nobody else has anything, also
that's fair.
The president, we know a lot of, like, every single president, even after their term or two terms, however many years they serve, they have Secret Service walking with them at mm-hmm. all times, no matter where they go, in their house, outside the house, in the White House, outside the White House, any of that. And a lot of the senators and stuff, you can see walking down the street. You can see a lot of these people. They don't get the same respect that a lot of, like, the president gets. I mean, I know it's 1 versus 500, but they deserve our respect because they represent the American people just as much as the president does.
I mean, just in my opinion, I feel like the reason for that happening is just because maybe senators are not as recognizable, because I wouldn't recognize a senator that was before my lifetime, but I would recognize Bill Clinton, and that's just because it's like the one person who's the main part of the executive branch, versus, like, which is probably the reason why I'm not saying that they don't deserve respect, but that's just probably why it's happening.
I think that's also kind of like what we were talking about, that the American people don't care as much. The American people are the people who have the voice and are voting these people in. And we're not giving them enough credit that they deserve. Mm-hmm. Like, we're just saying, oh, hey, I recognize his name every two or so years. Oh, I'll just put him down when it's election day. And we don't really understand the power that they hold. And so nobody puts forth the effort to know their senators and keep them in check, just like what me and Nick were talking about. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, okay, well, I guess they have power, so they can object to a state in a quote-unquote fraudulent or not election. Stuff like this that the American people look over.
Mm-hmm. So moving kind of like from this, when it comes to the aftermath of these riots, there have obviously been two sides, one of which is you have the left who is like, oh, hypocrisy. You have these law and order people who just stormed the heart of, you know, democracy, arguably in the world. So you have that side, but then you also have the side of, well, you know, no businesses were being burned, etc. You have this kind of back and forth on social media, whatever. So with this comparison between BLM protests and these Capitol protests, riots, storming, in what way do you think that they are equal in any measure? Do you guys think that when it comes to not necessarily the movement or like why they were doing it, but in the manner they went about it, do you think that it was equal in terms of destruction or whatever they did?
I just think that I mean, it's fair if you want to compare them, but in my opinion, it's just like apples and oranges comparing the BLM protest to the storming the Capitol, because just in my opinion, it's just something you shouldn't compare. Like, whether I believe there was election fraud or not, like, one's fighting for like a social value, and then one is just saying that the election was rigged. And whether I believe it or not, people are allowed to believe what they want, and if they want to protest that, they can go about it peacefully. And I feel like the problem was within both the BLM riots and people storming the Capitol is that there could have been people who were just not trying to represent their views. They were like, maybe it could have been Antifa people who were storming the Capitol, but also very well could have been in the BLM riots just people who wanted to loot, and they weren't actually just doing that to support BLM. They were just kind of making the whole organization look bad, and that same kind of thing can happen to the people who are storming the Capitol. They may have just been there to protest. So yeah, that's just my opinion on it.
I would agree with that. I think they're, to me at least, just being a historical and like a political guy, I think that there was a big difference in the destruction level. Whilst obviously small businesses being looted, that's horrid, there's also a difference, and there's something on a larger scale when it comes to the U.S. Capitol. There's a whole lot more at stake when one raids the center of the democratic process versus a small business or whatever. And it's the same thing. With BLM, there was a lot of the whole, well, I mean, 97% were peaceful or whatever, which is great. And it's the same. You have to take the same approach and be fair to with the riots. Like Graham was saying, like say 10%, you know, you can't count out every single solitary conservative due to the actions of a few absolute, you know, idiots who I think, you know, should face serious charges for their crimes. But especially when it comes to kind of this idea of one is not equal to the other. Both, I think, while you can't really compare them when it comes to ideology, I think when it comes to how they went about it, I think it was very similar in how overall it was impactful.
I think my take on this, and I don't want to like boil down too much on what people believe in and stuff like that, but I think that both Black Lives Matter, those riots, as well as the storming of the Capitol, before their radical actions, thought that they had what like good in mind, good at heart. They were like, we're doing something that needs to happen. We believe that this is wrong or that this is right, and that we need to have action. We need to do something about it, basically. But yeah, kind of like what you were saying, there is a difference between small businesses. Not that I condone them being burned down or destroyed or looted.
I'd like
or
to clarify,
like that.
I don't condone that either.
That
was a horrible thing that happened, just for listeners.
No, yeah. But yeah, it's definitely a different level in storming the Capitol. But when you look at it, it's kind of hard to compare because both groups had what's best or what they thought was best for the country or best for the people. And both groups also had radicals who acted out of their place.
Also, to add on to my point earlier with like comparing like the destruction or versus like storming the Capitol. Another reason why I just don't like to compare them is like if you're saying that, oh, storming the Capitol is worse, it's kind of like, well, you're just discrediting these businesses getting burned down. And if you're saying this one is worse, then you're also like discrediting people trying to like you were saying, like raid where the center of the democratic process is. So yeah.
Right. Yeah. And also with, yeah, I'll let you go.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, I'm kind of hopping on that. But basically my big takeaway is that it just boils down to whataboutism and kind of a lack of accountability from, you know, each side. And well, with how different their ideologies are, it boils down to, well, you don't own up to the stuff that's going on. Instead, you say, hey, what about the Black Lives Matter protests, you know? And I think it's dangerous where we're heading, where there's, you know, a less of a significance of accountability. And I think if we keep pushing this me versus you mentality and the, well, I'm just going to deflect. I'm just going to deflect and not, you know, own up to, hey, there were some issues there. We, you know, we took it too far. There were some people that were taking it way too far. I think we too often look to just throw something else instead of really addressing what's the issue.
Yeah, and also, if we're trying to compare the BLM movement that happened this past summer and like the storm on the Capitol and the protests and stuff, I don't think it's a fair thing to compare when BLM is actually just it's protesting rights versus a protest, which is more of a just political thing. Like, I believe our president should win versus we believe that Black lives aren't treated as fairly as any other lives in America.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's really a fair comparison. I think what we compare, the comparable thing between these two is the police presence and what they did against these movements.
Yeah. Like, I think the real comparison and the real, like, probably outrage on social media is due to the, not the riots or protests themselves, but the response of the police in each. Mm-hmm. Because, say, I believe the Capitol storming, there was 55 people arrested. During the BLM riots, there was 12,000 plus. And obviously, it's a little bit of a hard comparison because the BLM riots went on for a lot longer.
Yeah.
And they were much larger scale. But, like, there was plenty of examples of people being arrested during the BLM riots.
And then there was even, like, news crews. So, there's no real, like, statement that's like, oh, well, they didn't do this. Like, you know, news crews were wrongfully arrested. Like,
right. And it also has to do with what Blake was saying about whataboutism, but I think it is a fair question to pose that if the people storming the Capitol were majority people of color, we would have probably seen a very different day. It's hard to say, but...
I mean, I hear your point on that. I think it's so hard to compare, though, because a lot of these Black Lives Matter movements and stuff happened across social media. There was lots in multiple cities. There's... Mm-hmm. Stuff that's happening all day and the police are able to know about it, not justifying anything, any of the bad things that happened at either, honestly. But I think, honestly, the police were caught off guard at the storming of the Capitol. Like, no one really... Do I think that there should have been a stronger police presence there? Yes. But I don't think that we should just... It's just kind of a hard comparison when that when the Black Lives Matter protests happened over many days and were thought and planned out when... This one protest, not justifying the storming of the Capitol, happened one day.
I do think it's important to think, like, it's just a thought, but would the police have been, quote, more prepared if it was a black protest trying to storm the Capitol instead of mainly white people who are known to back the blue?
Yeah, there's no problem in asking those questions.
Yeah, I do think that that is valid to think about, but I don't think it is valid to judge a group of people based on that. So it is valid to think about that. It is valid to question people in authority. I completely agree with you. But I don't know if we can necessarily make quick assumptions based on a what if.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. Me personally, I think I have to see like actual evidence and facts. Like what you said, Sam, like, let's just say like if they were black, the police would have handled it differently. Me personally, I wouldn't just assume that. That's a lot of like assumption and that just just in my opinion, that's what a lot of people do nowadays is they just like assume facts like, oh, if it was this, then this would happen. Oh, if it was that, then this would happen. And yes, I do think you get that from inferences, but I also believe I think it should have been like if it happened, then it happened. And we can't just assume another outcome if something changed.
Right. And I think you make a good point, but it's also important to, I think it's important to look at past examples. And obviously I can't be sure that it would be a different day if they were massively people of color protesting and rioting at the Capitol. But looking at previous examples, I think we can look at it and make a good guess, because I think it's hard to say that there haven't been major mistreatment of people of color for probably the last decade, maybe even two decades, from the police, and it goes back further than that. But yes, we can't assume for sure that the Capitol would have looked different, because it's a case-by-case thing. But looking at previous examples, I feel like I can make a decent guess.
Yeah.
Just to like kind of comment on what other people are saying, in my opinion, it's like not whether a question. I don't really question what would have happened if it was a Black Lives Matter. Instead, it was just like shocking for me to see that there was cops who were just like taking selfies with the protester. There was one that was taking selfies with protesters who were in the Capitol building, and it was like, it's like kind of shocking to see. And I'm just like, I feel like they should have been more prepared. And that was my main like issue with that whole thing. It's like, even though like maybe they are unprepared, they didn't even try to be professional, I feel like, some of them. And that was my main problem with the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. I also think it makes our country look weak. Like, mm-hmm. Look at what, I mean, the other countries watch our news. I mean, why would they not? A lot of people don't like America. And when we see police, I mean, yes, if they're overwhelmed and stuff, but you can't really justify taking pictures with people inside the Capitol that are not rightfully there. Mm-hmm. It's like you see them basically just letting them go. How does that not make us look absolutely weak and not make us almost more of a target than we already are?
It makes us look like it's mob rule. Almost for, right. For in America, obviously we know what's going on, but for if you're just like, for example, a British citizen, you just turn on the TV and all you see is these like this mob storming into the Capitol, and you don't stick around, you look bad, and it overall hurts our image.
Other countries are probably clowning us right now.
Like literally, definitely. Boris Johnson was talking bad about us. Like
if we
come on, Boris Johnson,
like, all people Boris.
Now I think. I don't know, but I wonder what other countries thought about us during the BLM protests.
There was actually a lot of talk from them. In general, it was similar to how we are with BLM. It is not condoning the actions that were taken, but we understand like why it's happening. And the general response to this has been that this was an attack on democracy, and that the U.S. as a whole, though, is plenty strong enough to handle it and to continue to grow. Right. So I do have an interesting question. We have this, if you followed what happened, once the protesters got inside, they began going door to door. Congressmen and women who were unable to be evacuated in time were moved to a central room where the door was barricaded with a shelf, and there were three officers at the door, all with guns drawn, as people tried to smash in, and one can only assume get a hold of the congressmen and women, judging by the fact that some of them had zip ties, whatever. Videos as they were doing that were very, it was definitely, you could see how radical it was. It was like, you know, F the blue or whatever, trying to break in the door, whatever. We can talk about that later if we need to. The main takeaway from this was a woman was shot by a police officer for trying to get in. or a, was it a man or a woman? I can't remember. Somebody,
a woman.
A woman. Yeah, she was shot trying to get in and later died from her wounds. That has been a talk. Some call her a martyr or whatever, and others refer to her as just, you know, what happens. When it comes to us in this room, how do we view that?
I think, obviously, I'm not going to say good that she died. I think it's horrible that she died, but it doesn't surprise me, like, in the slightest.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I mean, of course, the night of when it happened, me and my parents were watching the news, and my parents brought up a good point that's like, it's really shocking that one person was shot. I mean, like, I know there was a lot of people arrested, but, I mean, this is the Capitol. Like, the fact that a lot more people didn't have guns drawn, like, when I was watching the news, I was expecting to see multiple casualties. Not that I wish casualties upon someone, but if that would have happened at the White House, people would have been dead.
Yeah.
Quick. Really quick.
Right.
But when it happens at the Capitol, it should shock everybody that it's one person dead or a few people wounded, stuff like that.
Yeah, and just to add on, kind of, I think I'm speaking for everybody here when we say that we didn't, like, wish death upon anybody, but, like, kind of, like, they had the guns out for a while, to my recollection, when seeing some of the videos. They should have realized that, like, if they have the guns out, like, what could happen if they're trying to actually get in?
Right.
And, like, I just feel that, like, you have to have some common sense there. Not that, like, oh, like, she deserved that. Like, I never wish death upon anybody, but it's just...
The whole day, to me, seems like a game of chicken to an extent, where people, they just kept pressing, you know, what they think they could get away with before having some ramifications, some consequences. And so while I pray for her family, the lady that was shot and killed, and I think it's a horrible thing, but I just, I think we should have more awareness, more respect when we're trying to play this game of chicken, I guess, to not have some common sense and to know we're going too far. Because from my recollection in the video, they busted a window where the congressmen were at, and then she tried to climb through that window to get into that area. And I it's a really tough question on, is the officer justified? Should he have been aiming for, you know, shoot to his arm or something like that? But
right, but, like, I do think every person who every rioter who entered the Capitol that day was taking the same risk. It's just she was the one who ended up with the consequences of it.
I agree.
Yeah. I think for me, it's not really as much of a difficult question. These were not street patrol officers. These were officers who were specially assigned to protect. So it wasn't like, and well, what should they have done? What should they have done? It was, I mean, you're going after, their one objective was to keep them safe. So when you're about to get into their last line of defense, I thought, when if it comes to the question of, is was the shooting justified? To me, it was justified.
Without a doubt.
I mean, yeah, I definitely agree. I mean, it's kind of what I was talking about earlier, but I'm really shocked that there weren't more people shot.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, like, if there were people, I mean,
like
there
you
weren't
said, blatant, if there was a riot at the White House, there'd probably be a lot more deaths.
And was there blatant weapons out? No, we don't really see a lot of pictures drawn with guns and stuff, but, like,
I can look. There were a lot of people were armed with pocket knives, tasers, whatever. There was one guy who actually died because he tased himself down there and it caused a heart attack and he died. That's a real story. But and then in one of the cars nearby, as I'm sure you all know, there were two pipe bombs found and a long rifle, and then there were two other pipe bombs placed at the Democrat convention area room and then one at the Republican convention room.
Right.
Yeah, with the bombs being found, I don't understand how it wasn't an instantly, like, more urgent, like, immediate, like, Pentagon sending in people. I know that obviously the request was denied at first, but I feel like as soon as that bomb is found, regardless of who is protesting, many people could have gotten hurt if it had gone off. And it's just like, I don't know, it's just
a tragedy.
I think that's kind of what is a part of what makes my stomach turn when hearing about all this in the news, is that America still, regardless of what could have happened to the American people as a whole, regardless of public, or excuse me, political party or anything like that, I think both sides of the media were trying to defend one side or another or blame one side or another, but, like, a lot of people could have gotten hurt, and still the American people aren't waking up to the fact that we need to be unified under the American people, under the instead of under the Republican Party or the Democratic Party, or if you're white or if you're black or whatever.
It was something that was very, very much politicized, and that's what happens. And I'm not gonna say I think it was wrong, and I think that, like Graham said, we should be focused on tackling these issues. But at the same time, we knew it was going to be politicized in some way or another. So I have a question. We brought up the pipe bombs. When it comes to pipe bombs were found at the location, and this was known as they were found during the storming, so people were inside, and the congressmen and women were still being, had three police security detail officers in one room. Ashman brought it up. The request to the DOD for National Guardsmen was denied, and this forced places, Maryland sent in state troopers, and I believe one other state sent in state police officers. So when it comes to this action, or rather inaction, from the DOD for denying this request, when at the time there were people inside, congressmen and women were stuck in a single room with one door between them with three officers. What is the reaction to the DOD not sending reinforcements or backing them up or forcing them out?
Well, listen, my thing is, with the request denied, look at what happened. We had no congressman injured or hurt, injured, hurt, dead, anything like that. No officers were hurt, at least inside the Capitol. I don't know about, all in or like outside.
Yeah,
and stuff.
Just real quick. Yeah. There were, I believe, 60 something officers injured, including five of which went into intensive care.
I know one officer died from his injuries.
Yes, one officer died.
Oh, like in the Capitol?
There were a couple dozen injured inside the Capitol.
Okay.
Either way.
Yeah, that's my bad. But I think that. Yeah, it sounds weird that they denied the request, but I feel like they knew they had it handled to a certain degree. I feel like they knew that they didn't need more reinforcements than what they had, and I just feel like there was definitely a certain amount of people on standby that especially like off-duty police officers and stuff, just even just around that area. I feel like there was plenty of people. Most we didn't even know about or something like that.
I know this is just a small sentence, but I think it was more negligence over neglect. I think they know what was going on, but I don't think really anybody can say that the request was denied on purpose to cause more harm to people. I think it does make us look really bad, and it's disappointing to see that. I think to sum that up, it's more negligence over neglect.
Yeah, I mean, I think I get what you're saying, Brandon, but I do think, just because nothing, I guess, country-changing happened there, like multiple congressmen dying or something like that, doesn't mean that it couldn't have. And I think it having those reinforcements, I don't think would have hurt. I'd say
the way I see it is 20/20 vision is all, hindsight's 20/20, right? And we know now nothing could have happened, but the fact that they still, the people like on the front lines, requested from other states to bypass this, and other officers were used to push people out of the Capitol, to me shows that it was needed, because when you need a large, sizable chunk of Maryland State Police just to clear out the building, I think it shows that it was needed. I think that we're just extremely lucky that nothing bad happened. And like Graham said, we're lucky only one person was shot.
Right.
Like that's honestly crazy with the people who stormed in and what they were doing.
Yeah.
I'm very much surprised more didn't die.
And regardless, in my opinion, regardless if you believe that the National Guard was needed or not, I just don't understand how the DOD in that moment is just able to make that call without the hindsight we have now of what happened. It's just, that's how I see it. I feel like you kind of have to send them in because it's like a crisis, kind of,
There's no real downside to sending them in. I'd rather be overly eager than with something like sending in reinforcements than not sending in reinforcements and then being wrong about it.
I think there's also a disconnect between police officers and having to, like, they resorted to the state police. I think there's a bond almost between, across state lines between police officers. There's a disconnect between the DOD and police officers who are there from DC. So it's almost, I don't want to put words in their mouth, but they could feel like, oh, well, they don't need us. I mean, this is overkill if we come in. But yeah, I'd rather be overprepared than underprepared or not prepared at all. So
yeah, for me, it was, there's no real downside to sending in extra troops. Some people have said that it would just, you know, escalate things further. But at that time, I don't, other than, you know, straight up a firefight, it can't escalate too much more when people are already on the verge of breaking in and doing God knows what to congressmen and women. At that point, it's like the situation's already pretty escalated. So at that point, play it safe. And while it may escalate, at least you're not having, you know, more cops injured, or you're not having, you know, congressmen and women, whatever, what
or the parts of the Capitol getting blown up.
Yeah, or whatever. So to me, I think they should have said something in. I think that could be a theory, Graham. It was just disconnect. Yeah. Anything else?
Even if there is a disconnect, it's important to say that it shouldn't be. Like, there shouldn't be a disconnect. And of course, like you said, hindsight's 20/20. But that's something that probably needs to be worked on, is the fact that a disconnect like that isn't something small. It's something that could cost a lot of lives.
Mm-hmm. So I've got another question. With the this now in the past, there are already being potential bills passed that would increase Capitol security, whatever. But on a more broad scale, how do you think that this storming of the Capitol, how do you think that this truly affects, or like how we're, as a country, we're going to move forward? Obviously, Democrats control House, Senate, and the presidential seat. So you have this, that they have the power to preemptively strike against something else like this happening.
I tend to lean more Democratic, but when I'm saying this, I'm just trying to look at this as objectively as possible. I feel that with this happening, for a lot of people, with all the Democrats controlling everything, I feel like for a lot of people, it's going to put back the Republican Party a bit, and put a tarnish on Trump's legacy, and a little bit for Republicans in general, just for the time being. I don't know how long that'll go on, but that's just how I see it.
I think the interesting thing to me is going to see if the Republican Party keeps following where it is now and following more of a Trump and what he's kind of saying, or it kind of reverts back to pre-Trump, because it seems like we've hit a point in the road where it's forking off, and we're seeing, you know, is it going to go off this one way or is it going to go the other? And I don't really know if it can kind of just go back, or if they can, you know, make up together, but I don't know. I think it'll be very interesting to see.
I think my hope in all of this, kind of going away from the storming of the Capitol part, but me and Nick talked about it earlier, me being more right-leaning, and really this goes for all congressmen and representatives of the House and people of the Senate. I want you, when you run and when you run on these values, when you get somebody's vote and when you hold an office, that you hold true to your word. People like Marsha Blackburn and Bill Hagerty ended up folding under pressure in the challenge of Arizona, which is very disappointing to me and I think a lot of other Republican people. But I hope that more people, like, there's a young guy, Matt Gaetz, who's a Republican in Florida who just got elected in, who really is what he said he was going to be. And I hope a lot of Republicans can follow in his footsteps and he continues to lead the Republican Party in that. You're honest with your word and you do what you say you're going to do when you do it, and you just hold true to those values that you ran on.
I agree with everything Graham just said. But just kind of a funny comment that reminds me of is when George H.W. Bush got elected, and one of like his main values was like, read my lips. I'm not going to raise taxes. He gets in, he raises taxes, and I mean that's like kind of funny and all, but it's just like it's one of his main values, and he went against it. It's just you don't want to see that out of anybody, especially a president. So what Graham brings up, a very important point.
I mean, I hope it's known that although I am right-leaning, I hope that happens for anybody, because I believe a vote is important and that everybody should vote when they have the right to, because a lot of countries don't get to do that. Aside the point, when you run on something, you run on your character and your policies, and when you are asked to do this and you don't do it, it's tarnishing you. It makes the people that voted for you upset, because you're not there just for one day or for one decision. You're there for multiple years at a time.
I would. That's debatable. But overall, I think. Talking about what Blake brought up with kind of this fork that we're coming to in the Republican Party. You kind of have these two heads emerging. You have Mitch McConnell, who has been, after so many years, he's now vocal and saying, telling Trump to just give it up. I think he's trying to look long term and preserve the party unity. And then you have Trump and his supporters who are still pushing this idea of we won the election, which at this point isn't going to change. The election outcome is sealed. But I think that's going to be interesting in how that goes, whether or not this kind of Trump movement, if they do split, if the kind of the Trump movement dies out, with Trump, you know, slowly getting older and moving out of the spotlight, if that kind of dies out, or if a schism in the Republican Party is something that, you know, we can look ahead and that's going to continue to exist.
Thank you. Just what I've noticed is I feel like there's just now a worrying fusion of politics and media and people's opinions. Because I just feel that MSNBC is a good example. Even though it's left-leaning like I am, I know that, like, just they're flat out just, like, putting out their opinions. And I feel like there needs to be a news source that for people to turn to just learn the news in its purest form so they can make their own opinion on it. And I just feel that, like, even in the last election in 2016, there was outcries of election fraud. This election, there's outcries of election fraud. And I feel that that's due to this worrying fusion of just the people's opinions when they're, like, telling the news to millions upon millions of people. And that just needs to be seriously examined by people before they just accept the news how it is. So, yeah.
Kind of going back to what Nick was saying about this divide in the Republican Party, and, like, kind of like Mitch McConnell almost versus Donald Trump. I do hope that the Republican Party follows after Donald Trump's footsteps and a lot of the policies that he's had. When you lose, you do lose. I mean, it is, there's a time and place for you to understand that it's like, it is sealed, it's done. And you have to lose just as well as you win. But I hope that the Republicans don't fold just to get another term in office. Like, sometimes it seems that Republican congressmen tend to run on these conservative or Republican ideas and then fold to get another election to attract the moderate voters.
So, yeah, I have one final question. With, I know nobody here condones what happened. With this storming of the Capitol, and, you know, we just talked about possible effects later on. When it comes to kind of combating this radical side of the, for this example, and I know there's radical left as well, but for when it comes to this radical Trump side, and the radical left, if you want to include that, how should we go about, you know, combating this extreme, you know, almost domestic extremism that's here, you know, that is as much a threat to, you know, everyone, because it's so, well, by the term, it's radical. You don't really know what's going to happen.
I feel that it obviously is people's duty to vote, but going, it's not just voting. People need to be able to educate themselves with trustworthy news. And you just looking at one news site, like I said earlier, is just not enough nowadays. You just need to examine it and really like try to examine the news and form your own opinion so that you cannot be as radical. Because I may be Democrat leaning, but I agree with some conservative values and I agree with some Democrat values. And it's just, you don't have to be a Democrat and agree with everything that every Democrat says. That's just irrational. And it just doesn't make sense to me. And people just need to educate themselves more, in my opinion. But yeah.
And on a small scale, having like this kind of discussion is really important to progressing your own beliefs. And discussion with people of the other party will probably bring you away from the radical, combative wings of each party's.
Yeah, I think that's a really, really good point. People having conversations and honestly getting off their phones and technology, it would be a huge part in this generational idea of not being so radical. Like, me and Sam have differing opposing views. I mean, like, if you were to look at us both on paper, you'd say that they probably disagree and they probably don't get along. But before the podcast, we had a great conversation. We found that we had really a lot in common.
A lot in common.
That if you, again, saw us on paper, you'd be like, I don't think they would probably get along too well. But having these conversations and educating yourself is a great way to start this movement of change.
For sure. That's been our goal with this podcast from the beginning, to kind of promote and just show people that, like, we, like, half of us aren't even a voting age yet. You know, we're going to be very soon, but at the same time, it doesn't matter who you are, how old you are, how much experience you've been through. Like, having these conversations are good, because especially if you're on the younger side, you can start to flesh out ideas and opinions for later down the line. And even if you aren't like young like us or whatever, there's always time to learn and change and listen. And that's something that I think all of us here, you know, definitely support. And it's something that we've wanted to, you know, push out and to help like get people to understand that educating yourself is important. It's not, you know, it's not something that you need to be insane about, and it's not something that you can just laugh at and be like, oh, whatever, lame, whatever. Like, this is something that everybody should, you know, whether or not you enjoy politics, should take a part in, at least to some level, and hopefully, you know, learn and better yourself.
I mean, I know I'm not like the host of this podcast or anything, but I just do feel like encouraging like people younger than us that it is, don't let anybody ever tell you that you're too young to be involved in politics or anything like that, because it is important to have conversations. And just because you identify as right-leaning or left-leaning doesn't mean that, kind of like Ashton was saying, that you can be closed-minded. Like, you need to be open to other people's ideas. Yes, rely on facts, but also people do have stories to tell you about lots of different things. So don't close off your mind just because you want to fit into this box that America has put on these parties and ideas.
And yeah, just one final comment for me. It's just like, there's always two or maybe even more sides to a conversation. And it's just, there's obviously reasons why people are supporting opposing views as you. And being able to hear out those reasons and rationalize with other people is very important. So just surrounding yourself with people who have different views than you is important, so that they can challenge your ideas and you can understand other people's point of views and you don't become as narrow-minded, which I think is very important in our society.
Right, because I'm sure all of us in this room, like, we've been exposed to political things since we were 12, 13 is probably when we started.
Maybe even earlier, yeah.
Maybe even earlier, actually caring about it. And I think it's important to get exposed to politics at a younger age. But I think it's also important to don't push yourself in a slot, whether it's your parent's slot or your friend's slot. Like, we're seeing a lot of very young 10 to 12 year olds who are far, far right or far, far left. And that's dangerous, because then as you grow up, you aren't going to get out of that box. And I think it's important to, like we were saying, have these conversations, and especially at a young age, stay really open-minded. Because you aren't going to form a full political opinion till 16, 17, probably.
Most people never fully flesh out everything. Yeah, exactly. 80, 90 years, and there's still questions and bits and pieces you don't know.
Yeah, definitely. Also, just another point, on either side, don't push yourself further into a box by doing stuff to another party. Like, a lot of right people can call the left, like, liberals, and call them a bunch of names. And
call them socialists and communists.
Yeah, just put yourself in a further box away from people, so that subconsciously you say, oh, well, I can't look like a leftist because I've called these people a bunch of names. Same thing with the left people. I don't condone calling other people names because it puts yourself in a proverbial box that you can't get yourself out of because you don't want to look like what you called the other side.
Yeah, if you separate yourself so far from the other side by calling left people socialists or communists or calling right people racists and homophobic without ever even talking to these people, then American politics are going to stay so polarized, and so it's going to stay a two-party thing. All
right. All good?
All good.
All righty. So, So, from all of us here, the Hawk Time Podcast, I'd like to give a big thank you to all of our guests today. It's great having you.
Thanks for having us.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you for having me.
From all of us here at the Hawk Time Podcast, thank you to Sam. Hopefully Adam will be back soon. Thank you all for listening, and we'll talk to you later.